hearing examiner with the Bureau of Land Management stationed in Salt Lake City, Utah. As you know, this hearing has been scheduled to receive state...
The system's not working.
This hearing, can you hear me now? As you know, now can you hear me? This hearing has been scheduled to receive statements or expressions of views on a proposal of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System to construct a petroleum pipeline across Alaska. Before outlining the scope of the hearing and the procedures to be followed, I would like to introduce the Undersecretary of the Interior. The Undersecretary will first make an opening statement and then introduce the other members of the hearing panel. I present now the Undersecretary of the Interior, the Honorable Russell E. Train.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know whether this mic is working or not. Can you hear me all right? No. I think it'd be a good idea if those of you over there near the door would move more toward the center of the room, because I find that the panel here is facing away from you. And if you could move more toward the center, I think you'd hear better. I'm Russell Train, the Undersecretary of the Interior. The public hearings which are being conducted today have been scheduled by Secretary Hickel to elicit the views from a broad range of interests on the 800-mile pipeline right-of-way requested by the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System from the North Slope to Valdez. The hearing is designed to provide a mechanism for the free expression of opinions on the overall social, economic, and environmental implications of the proposed right-of-way. It is not specifically designed to examine the more technical stipulations for the right-of-way, which are presently being examined by federal industry, conservation, and State of Alaska representatives. Although I would add that if anybody has any comments on specific stipulations, that, of course, we will receive them. By way of background, let me briefly review the sequence of events
leading up to this hearing. In the summer of 1968, the discovery of oil at Prudhoe Bay on the North Slope was announced. Estimates of the magnitude of this discovery vary widely from 5 billion to as much as 100 billion barrels. Whatever the estimate, there is little question, however, that the North Slope strike, as extrapolated to adjacent Arctic areas, represents a discovery of major national, and I would add international, importance. In April of this year, Secretary Hickel created the North Slope Task Force within the Department of the Interior to ensure that oil exploration and development in northern Alaska be consistent with the protection of the Arctic and subarctic environment and with the safeguarding of native interests. In May, President Nixon enlarged this departmental task force into an all-government group to include the Departments of Defense, Transportation, Commerce, Health, Education and Welfare, and Housing and Urban Development. It also includes membership from the National Science Foundation and the Office of Science and Technology. Secretary Hickel asked me to chair this federal government-wide task force. On June the 12th,
the Department of the Interior received an application from the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, a consortium of three oil companies, for an 800-mile pipeline and associated construction road right-of-way from Prudhoe Bay on the Beaufort Sea to the Port of Valdez on the Pacific. We were asked to grant the application by the 1st of July, a period of some 2.5 weeks. Most recently, on July 25th, the department received a request from the state of Alaska to modify the so-called land freeze along a portion of the intended pipeline route to allow for the construction of a 53-mile secondary highway from Livengood to the Yukon River. We were asked to lift the freeze, a procedure involving the consent of both the Senate and House Interior Committees and consultation with the Federal Power Commission by the 1st of August, a period under 1 week. With concentrated effort, we were successful in clearing this request through the House Interior Committee on the 7th of August and through the Senate Interior Committee on the 8th of August and through the Federal Power Commission shortly thereafter. Secretary Hickel signed the order modifying the freeze for this 53 miles on the 13th of August. Thus, the request for modification by the state of Alaska was processed and approved by the Department of the Interior in 13 working days. Let me be completely clear on several points. The Department of the Interior is fully aware of the magnitude of the North Slope oil discovery and its importance to the national interest, the national defense, and to the state of Alaska. There are no responsible voices suggesting that the oil not be developed. I assure you that the Department of Interior is just as anxious as the people of Alaska that North Slope oil get to market as quickly as possible. At the same time, we have responsibilities and duties under the law which we cannot avoid. The department is also fully aware of the potential impact of large-scale technology upon the Arctic and subarctic environment. As trustees of the public domain, over which 95% of the pipeline is to be built, and as stewards of our native natural resources, it is our responsibility to ensure that the environment and native interests be properly protected in the exploration and development of North Slope oil. Our concern, however, is not simply the safeguarding of what has been termed a fragile and delicate ecosystem. Our commitment is as strongly directed toward the orderly development and transportation of oil as it is toward environmental and native interest values. We do not view these ends as conflicting alternatives. We are convinced that oil development and the environmental protection can be complementary. We know, and the industry knows, that in this area, good economy must of necessity be good ecology. Let me also emphasize the magnitude of interests in this development. In addition to the members of the Federal Task Force, we are closely involved with other scientific, industrial, conservation, and congressional bodies. Moreover, we have the personal concern of President Nixon, who charged Secretary Hickel with the responsibility to ensure that Alaskan oil be developed, and I quote, without destruction and with minimum damage to the Arctic environment. We intend to meet that assignment. Since the inception of the task force, we have moved, I really think, with speed and high priority. We have successfully cultivated a spirit of close cooperation with industry and have met continuously with their representatives. They are completely aware of our concerns and we of theirs. We have addressed to them an extensive set of questions, and they have given us their answers. We have met regarding these answers, and both groups are aware of the progress that has been made and of the steps that yet need to be taken. Secretary Hickel has advised Mr. Dulaney, chairman of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, that he could be assured of priority approval of the application when several conditions were met. These included the meeting of law and regulations, the protection of native interests, the safeguarding of environmental values, and the establishment of close cooperation and coordination with the state of Alaska and consultation with appropriate bodies of the Congress. One of our long-standing regulations requires that proposed right-of-ways across the public domain be mapped with sufficient accuracy. At the present time, this requirement has not yet been met. It is procedurally impossible to grant a right-of-way without knowing where it is going to go. The industry is fully aware of this deficiency and is taking steps to remedy it. Likewise, the federal government needs to know where the pumping stations ought to go. Industry is working on this, and when the sites are pinpointed, we can go forward. Further, legal difficulties are involved in the lands adjacent to Valdez. The resolution of state land selection in that area is delayed by a suit against the state of Alaska and a protest to the Secretary of the Interior. These legal problems must be resolved before action can be taken in that area. Moreover, the proposed right-of-way touches upon lands under the jurisdiction of the United States Forest Service, the Corps of Engineers, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, as well as lands selected by the state of Alaska. Coordination and agreement must be obtained with these diverse interests before approval can be granted. Our concern for the protection of the native peoples and environmental values is reflected in the set of proposed stipulations for the right-of-way. They were originally drafted by the Department of the Interior in consultation with three departments of the state of Alaska: the state of Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the state of Alaska Department of Natural Resources, and the state of Alaska Department of Highways. The stipulations were then edited and refined by Department of the Interior officials in Washington, submitted back to industry, conservation, congressional, native, and state of Alaska representatives for review and comment. Now, I should emphasize that we have not arbitrarily issued a set of ironclad stipulations, but rather have made available to industry, the state, and other interested groups a proposed set of stipulations on which we welcome constructive comments. May I emphasize that these stipulations are still in unfinished and not final form. They represent our best efforts to date, and we not only welcome but solicit opinion on them. As an indication of the cooperation which has been achieved, let me quote from a letter written to the State Bureau of Land Management Director, Mr. Silcock, from the State of Alaska Commissioner of Fish and Game. Mr. Reitz said, "I will take this opportunity to pass on to you the comments of my staff, who, after reviewing the proposed stipulations, have indicated to me that they feel that the Bureau of Land Management has done an excellent job of compiling the stipulations while covering an extremely varied field in an adequate manner. I concur with them in their commendations to you and your staff." In a project of this magnitude, it is imperative that judgment, intelligence, and goodwill be exercised at every turn. The Department of Interior is committed to these principles. We respect the experience and judgment we have found in industry. We commend them for their progress to date, and we join with them in moving forward in mutually solving the many and complex problems involved in this project, properly called the largest private construction project in the free world. We have achieved in Washington close cooperation and understanding between conservation, industry, and government representatives. We have worked and will continue to work closely with the state of Alaska representatives in the legal, procedural, as well as technical and environmental problems that mutually face us regarding this enormous project. The task force and Secretary Hickel are committed to the view that environment and oil are complementary values. The speed and success of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline will depend, in essence, upon the cultivation of a spirit of close cooperation and participation from the many diverse interests involved. The extent to which this is achieved cannot but be reflected in the success of our efforts to expedite it. What we are finding in the Arctic today is not the nation's last frontier, but a new frontier of cooperation and mutual commitment between private industry, government, and conservation interests. We are successfully developing a new perception and a new expression of the course of public responsibility. Not only the President, but the entire nation is watching what we do here today and tomorrow. Thank you very much. Now, if I may introduce the other members of the federal panel. On my left, Dr. Leslie Glasgow, Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, Parks, and Marine Resources. I think to occupy the empty seat, Dr. Bill Pecora, Director of the Geological Survey. I don't know where Bill is at the moment. Next, Mr. Pat Ryan, Regional Coordinator for the Department of Interior. Mr. Bert Silcock, Regional Director for the Bureau of Land Management. And Mr. Morris Thompson, Special Assistant to the Secretary of Interior. Thank you very much, Mr. Minch.
A court reporter, Mrs. Pat Kling of Anchorage, is here to make a verbatim transcript of the hearing. All matter that is spoken in the hearing room while the hearing is in session will be recorded by the reporter unless I specifically direct off-the-record comments. In order to ensure a complete and accurate record of the hearing, it is absolutely necessary that only one person speak at one time. This hearing is a fact-finding proceeding and might be termed a legislative-type proceeding as distinguished from a judicial-type proceeding. Witnesses or parties desiring to present their views will not be sworn or placed under oath. There will be no examination or interrogation of any of the parties testifying, except possibly on occasion by members of the federal panel. The members of the panel are present for the purpose of obtaining as complete an understanding as possible of the many problems involved and the views or opinions of all interested parties. They are not here for the purpose of answering questions. However, they may address questions to any witness to clarify facts or to supply additional information. The members of the panel will address any questions that they might have after the particular witness has finished his or her presentation. While the hearing is in session, no one will be recognized to speak other than the parties who wish to testify or present statements and members of the panel. Each witness will have the choice, after being called, of either one, presenting without any oral testimony a written statement which will be received as an exhibit for incorporation in the record of this hearing, or two, presenting a written statement for incorporation in the record, and in addition, presenting an oral statement covering the material in the written statement or other material, or three, simply presenting an oral statement for the record. In the interest of time, it is requested that the testimony or presentation of each party be kept to 10 minutes whenever possible. In any event, all parties will be limited in their testimony or presentation to a maximum of 15 minutes. A number of parties have already indicated their desire to be heard. There either is now or there shortly will be a list of these parties showing the order in which they will appear posted in the foyer. In order that you may have some idea of the order of proceeding this morning, I'll read a list of the parties that are scheduled to testify either this morning or possibly the fore part of this afternoon. Governor Keith H. Miller of the state of Alaska, Deputy Commissioner Dale Wallington, Department of Natural Resources, state of Alaska, Deputy Commissioner Ben Hilliker, Department of Fish and Game, state of Alaska, James Anderig, Chief Branch of Environmental Health, Department of Health and Welfare, state of Alaska, Commissioner Harold D. Strandberg, Department of Public Works, and H.D. Skugel, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Highways, state of Alaska. Following the presentations of the witnesses from the state of Alaska, we'll then proceed with R.G. Delaney, Chairman, Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, Dr. Edgar Wayburn, Vice President, Sierra Club, Harry Porter, Acting Mayor, Fairbanks, Alaska, Al Swalling, Chairman, North Commission, State of Alaska, Phil Douglas, Executive Secretary, Sport Fishing Institute, David M. Hickok, Federal Field Committee for Development Planning in Alaska, Professor Charles Koningsberg, Alaska Methodist University, Anchorage, Alaska, Sharon M. Cisna, Anchorage, Alaska, Eben Hobson, Executive Director, Arctic Slope Native Association, Daniel L. Osborne, Alaska Alpine Club. Now, I read that list only to let you know of the witnesses that will be testifying this morning and possibly the fore part of the afternoon, and the order of their presentation. If there are any parties who have not registered and who desire to be heard, they should register with Mrs. Hendricks at the table in the foyer by giving their name, address, and their affiliation, if any. If you wish, this registration can be done during the morning or during the luncheon recesses. We will post an additional list of parties desiring to be heard, showing the order in which they will appear in the foyer this afternoon. Now, after this formal hearing is concluded,
The record will be held open for a period of 15 days or until September 15, 1969, during which time written statements will be received for inclusion with the record of this proceeding. Any such statements should be filed with Mr. Patrick Ryan, the Regional Coordinator for all Interior Agencies, at his office, which is 632 6th Avenue, room 410, Anchorage, Alaska. Copies of the record of this hearing, including all written statements submitted at this time and all written statements submitted within the next 15 days, will be available for public inspection at the Bureau of Land Management offices in Fairbanks, at Anchorage, and at Washington, D.C. Copies of the transcript of the hearing, which Mrs. Kling is taking, which will include everything that is spoken, but not the written statements, can be obtained by making arrangements with the reporter. Copies of all written statements, either submitted at this time or within the next 15 days, can be obtained by making appropriate arrangements with the Bureau of Land Management offices, either in Fairbanks, Anchorage, or at Washington. We would like to have this hearing as formal as possible, and accordingly, I ask that there be no display of any emotion, either by applause or otherwise, during the presentation of testimony or statements by the various witnesses. The first witness, then, is the Governor of the State of Alaska, Keith H. Miller.
Governor, while you're taking your seat, let me just say how very glad we are that you in particular are here today to lead off, knowing your dedication to the interests of this state and its people. Is particularly fitting that we hear from you first, so I bid you welcome and say again how glad we are that you are here.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, Mr. Chairman, other distinguished members of the panel. I am extremely grateful to the Department of the Interior for the hearings on the proposed pipeline which have been scheduled for today and tomorrow. These hearings will give the opportunity to all interested Alaskans to express their views. I am particularly pleased that these hearings are being held in Fairbanks because this is the center of the region which will be so greatly affected by pipeline development. It is appropriate and significant that these hearings are being held here where there is the greatest concern over the pipeline. This is consistent with the new federalism enunciated recently by the administration of President Richard Nixon. It reflects the new federal effort to coordinate programs which the states and local governments on matters which are primarily of state concern. This is a departure from the policies of the Department of the Interior in prior years, and I believe that the department should be commended for this attitude. I hope that this new federal concern with the state will continue into the future, and I'm sure that it will. Gentlemen, we are in the twilight of the 60s, a decade that began with the high hopes of statehood, a decade in which we were going to build a state that would be the envy of all the others. It has turned out to be a decade of frustrated progress, a decade of natural disasters, of rebuilding, of rededication, and of hope for the future. Many of our efforts to develop a thriving economy for our people were knocked aside by the massive Good Friday earthquake of 1964. We had to put first things first. We dug out of the rubble and rebuilt our communities. Then we looked once again to the future. We started making things happen by working to develop our fisheries, our timberland, our potential oil fields, and our other mineral resources. But once again, in 1967, we had to pause. 2 years ago, gentlemen, at about this same time, you couldn't have been sitting in here if you had been in Fairbanks. You would have been helping the people of Fairbanks recover from one of the most disastrous floods ever experienced by any people anywhere. And once again, all Alaskans rallied to help the stricken residents of Fairbanks, where the Chena River had gone on a rampage and slammed unmercifully across the land. But all that is past. Now we are standing in the twilight of the 60s, waiting for the dawn of the 70s. Our optimism has not been diminished. We have met the awesome challenges and responsibilities that were ours in the first decade of statehood, and our roots in Alaska have grown even deeper. But I didn't come here today to substitute words for workmanship or glitter for substance. I came here to show you, in the best way I know how, that the state of Alaska has been working during the past decade to develop its resources and at the same time protect the fragile environment of this country. Even before the national spotlight was focused on Alaska, we were working to develop standards and regulations that would protect our land and enable us to avoid the tragic mistakes that have resulted in almost unbelievable pollution in some of the other states. I would like to set out for you now several basic principles which orient the approach of my administration to the development of the natural resources of Alaska. An awareness of these principles may lead to a fuller appreciation of the specific position of the state. I do not want to restrict my remarks to pipeline development at the present time because I think that the broader subject of natural resource development provides an easier understanding of state philosophy. The specific aspects of pipeline development will be discussed by members of my administration who are knowledgeable on different aspects of that development. First, the basic responsibility for the development of natural resources on the state public domain belongs to the state itself. Any state has the basic jurisdiction over its natural resources because the authors of the United States Constitution believe that local knowledge and local experience could best deal with the natural resources within a state. There is a recognition of that jurisdiction in the Statehood Act and the Alaska Constitution. It should be a truism that each state has the right to control the use of its natural resources. However, this has not always been the case in the history of Alaska. The territory of Alaska had no substantial jurisdiction over its natural resources, and this was one of the reasons that Alaskans voted for statehood. I do not believe that there should be any relinquishment of that authority of the state to the federal government. Second, the transportation of natural resources to market is a matter of concern for both the federal and state governments. There are aspects of the problem which are most appropriately dealt with at the national level. However, there are other aspects which are primarily of state concern. The interests of both governments are so joined in this subject that it is essential that there be close coordination between the two governments. This is especially true when the transportation route is within the state. Third, the criterion of natural resource development in Alaska is maximum use consistent with the public interest. This is the language of our Alaska Constitution. This public interest includes not only the maximization of revenues from the natural resources, but also the conservation of these resources for our future generations. Conservation of natural resources in Alaska is a subject of everyday concern to many Alaskans because our lives are so closely tied to the environment. It is because of this concern that many Alaskans have special knowledge of our Alaskan environment. Alaskans also have a special interest in the conservation of this environment because it is our environment. We live here in Alaska because we like the wilderness frontier, and you should know that we intend to preserve that wilderness in a manner that is consistent with the development of our resources. These are some of the principles which I believe should guide our discussions on development, pipeline development, especially in Alaska. The subject to which we address ourselves at these hearings is the proposed pipeline development of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, more commonly known as TAPS. Here in Alaska, we have seen only the beginning of what oil can mean for us. The first major oil field was discovered in 1957, and both exploration and development work has been proceeding rapidly since that time. The present annual production of oil runs approximately $160 million from the Kenai Peninsula and the Cook Inlet fields. The oil industry has already invested over $1.25 billion in Alaska. These big investments can continue. Although costs are relatively high for exploration and development work in Alaska, well production rates are quite high compared to those of most of the other states, so that costs may be more quickly recovered. Some $50 million has been invested in one of the largest urea plants in the world for the production of fertilizer. Another $57 million has been invested in the construction of a gas liquefaction plant, which will ship liquefied petroleum gas in huge tankers to Japan for use by the city of Tokyo. In the years ahead, it seems not only possible but probable that additional petrochemical plants will be constructed in Alaska. We have already seen how oil and its development and marketing can bring new industries into our state. Those new industries mean more jobs and a better way of life for all Alaskans. One of the concerns of the state is a possible delay in the development of the pipeline because of protracted negotiations between the Department of the Interior and Insular Affairs Committees of Congress, the State of Alaska, and TAPS. The state is concerned about such a delay because it also means the delay in the benefits which are to accrue to the people of this state. The state hopes that its efforts will be able to cut short that delay, but still accomplish every objective of that negotiation. I believe that the basic objective of the discussions which have occurred so far is environmental conservation. The state agrees that there must be written conservation safeguards before there can be a grant of a permit for pipeline development. There appears, however, to be a need for further agreement as to the specific methods and techniques in the pipeline construction to accomplish the objectives of conservation. I would like to emphasize to the Department of the Interior that the state has present conservation responsibilities over the pipeline corridor, and that the state has a special interest in this corridor. I suggest, therefore, that it is in the best interests of the state and federal governments that the state exercise conservation control over the transportation corridor. The state presently controls the land upon which the pipeline will begin and end. We control some of the land over which the pipeline will pass, and control all of the rivers and streams over which this pipeline will pass. I believe that it makes more sense to have a single government have the basic environmental control over this project. In line with this approach, I have had experts from interested state departments prepare conservation standards to be included in the pipeline permit. They are based on the draft stipulations presented to the state by the Department of the Interior just 2 weeks ago. But there has been a refinement of those stipulations in the light of the experience of Alaskans in northern construction and conservation. The standards summarize the objectives and effects of the various state statutes, regulations, and experience, and are indicative of the operations and services of various state agencies in the field. Furthermore, These proposed environmental standards have been incorporated in the Livengood to Yukon River Road contract executed between TAPS and the state of Alaska. I am glad to be able to present a copy of those proposed standards to the Department of the Interior at this hearing today. We should now accelerate our discussions on the environmental standards that are to be included in a pipeline construction permit so that the state and federal governments are in accord on these standards. I have appointed a task force to work exclusively on this project for the next several weeks, and I hope that they will be able to work with the Department of the Interior on the preparation of standards which will reflect the experience of both state and federal governments. I hope that we are then able to get the approval of the Interior and Insular Affairs Committees shortly after Congress reconvenes in September. To show the intense concern of the state in this matter, I have brought with me today my cabinet and other key state officials. They are all dedicated public servants. Today, each of them is going to explain that there is the experience and capability in Alaska available for the control of a project of this magnitude. We in Alaska are looking forward to the new decade with the optimism and enthusiasm that is the spirit of Alaska. It was this same spirit that brought us statehood. We have never been afraid of challenges, and we won't back away from this one. Mr. Secretary, thank you very much. May I submit a copy of the proposed standards for the record?
Yes, and we'll mark that as Exhibit 1, Governor.
Thank you, Governor. If I may just respond very, very quickly, we certainly welcome the appointment by you of a group to work with the department on the stipulations and on the pipeline. I think that's a very constructive step, and we look forward to working with them, and we are grateful for the standards which the state has developed and will consider them as very helpful to us in review of our own stipulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you. The next witness is Deputy Commissioner Dale Wallington, Department of Natural Resources, State of Alaska.
Mr. Examiner, members of the panel, my name is Dale Wallington, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources for the State of Alaska. This testimony, in support of the Governor's statement, will show that the Department of Natural Resources has the laws, regulations, stipulations, and experience necessary to supervise, in cooperation with other agencies, the use of Alaska's water and related land resources. Article 8 of Section 1 of the State Constitution states, "It is the policy of the state to encourage the settlement of its lands and to develop its resources by making them available for maximum use consistent with public interest." The preceding quotation is one of the basic wisdoms governing the administrative action of state agencies. Section 3, Article 8 of the State Constitution states, "Wherever occurring in the natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for their common use." In Title 46 of Alaska Statutes, we find a definition of one of these resources, water. The statutes define water as meaning all waters of the state, surface or subsurface, occurring in their natural state, except mineral and medicinal waters. The ownership of the latter two types of waters remains with the federal government. Chapter 50 of Session Laws of Alaska for 1966 amended Title 46 to provide a system for appropriation and use of water. This legislation, entitled Alaska Water Use Act, delegates authority for its administration to the Department of Natural Resources. The Water Use Act provides the department with the necessary legal vehicle for controlling and adjudicating the use of water resources of Alaska by defining appropriation as diversion, impounding, or withdrawal of a quantity of water from a source for a beneficial use. Appropriation is only permissible by permit from the Water Resource Section of the Division of Lands, Department of Natural Resources. Emphasis is being given to these appropriate statutes because substantial number of the proposed pipeline and road stipulations are concerned with water use. This facet of water resource management properly falls within the jurisdiction of the Department of Natural Resources. The proposed stipulations also contain, in a large measure, a number of items relating to the management of land resources. This responsibility on state lands has been assigned under Title 38 of Alaska Statutes to the Division of Lands in our department. Present statutes and regulatory controls govern use of lands under lease and permit. It has been known for some time that additional regulations for the protection of the environment on unleased lands was necessary. In the past year, the Bureau of Land Management adopted the first exploration control guidelines. This was the first effort in Alaska to control exploration operations on unleased state domain, public domain. The state, after review of the federal guidelines, did not believe there were sufficient specific and broadly applicable to all forms of land use. Therefore, the Department of Natural Resources, through the Division of Lands, in cooperation with the Department of Fish and Game, drafted a meaningful, practical, and enforceable set of regulations to assure maximum reasonable protection to all resources on unleased state lands, including but not limited to aesthetic, scenic, recreation, and plant or animal biospheres. The commissioner over the past 9 months has held informal hearings to discuss these regulations with interested groups, and the final proposals will be adopted after formal hearing next month. These regulations, as proposed, seem mutually agreeable and satisfactory to virtually all segments of the public interest. The adoption of these land use regulations will permit the department to control any use or operation on unleased state's lands, which would involve use of tractor-wheeled vehicles and similar equipment. A copy of these regulations are attached to this presentation. On leased land or granted land from the state, such as oil and gas leases, timber lands, material permits, and right-of-ways, the operators are required to minimize the adverse effect on the environment by fish and game stipulations. These stipulations require the lessee to present for prior approval to the Division of Lands their plans of operation. Such plans must be approved by the Department of Natural Resources and concurred in by the Department of Fish and Game. Where water quality standards are involved, approval by the Department of Health and Welfare is solicited. An approved well drilling permit from the Division of Oil and Gas also contains such fish and game stipulations. Approval of these documents, a copy of which is appended, will indicate the duplicate character of many of the items in the proposed pipeline stipulations. In addition to a working agreement with the Department of Fish and Game on the above stipulations, the two departments are finalizing a cooperative agreement to identify and give maximum protection to fish and game habitats. Under this agreement, a specific area would be classified appropriately for protection of such environment. To facilitate the above agreement, the Division of Lands under the Administrative Procedures Act has set up a resource management land classification. Under this classification, resource lands, management lands, means those lands containing an association of surface or subsurface resources which are especially suited to multiple use management. Such management may be accomplished in whole or in part pursuant to an interagency agreement. Section 102.224 of the Land Classification Regulations states, resource management lands shall be retained in the public ownership and may be leased only after the purpose consistent with the public interest. Pursuant to this classification and the interagency agreement, the waterfall area of the Sioux Sutna Flats has been so classified. Other portions of the state, such as the eelgrass area in the Eisenbach region, will eventually come under our memorandum of agreement. Similarly, designated habitats along the proposed pipeline, if appropriate, could be delegated to this land classification. The Department of Natural Resources, through its Parks and Recreation section, has considerable outdoor-oriented expertise. This section of the Division of Lands has just recently completed the final review with the Outdoor Recreation Council of the state's Outdoor Recreation Comprehensive Plan. In addition to the state recreation activities, our personnel furnishes expertise to local government agencies of the cities and boroughs. At the present time, the department has a contract with the University of Alaska for a recreation study of the Keystone Canyon area, a critical portion of the pipeline route. The personnel of Parks and Recreation are dedicated to providing and maintaining the scenic and aesthetic values of our natural resources. Their responsibilities extend beyond the natural environment to sites, buildings, markers, graveyards, and lands which may be designated as historic sites and monuments. The entire Department of Natural Resources is conservative-oriented. We have too often seen the devastation caused by man's carelessness, especially with fire, to be otherwise. The Department, utilizing the personnel of our oil and gas division, is able to supervise the housekeeping chores on well locations and access roads. Our engineers and geologists, when inspecting test wells for proper oil and gas conservation practices, report on the appearance of the location, sanitary conditions, and construction methods. No location is approved for abandonment until inspected by this agency. Violations of rules and regulations are reported to the industrial management and to the proper state agency. The Division of Oil and Gas, in conjunction with soil conservation personnel, ecologists, foresters, and other land management experts, have conducted experiments with various tracked vehicles on the North Slope. A complete report on the environmental damage, plant species involved, recovery factors, and recommended methods of operation is being prepared. From this report, the department will have concrete evidence as to the environmental degradation resulting from such equipment. In summation, the testimony presented above substantiates Governor Miller's statement. It indicates in part the experience, ability, and desire of state personnel to manage the natural resources of Alaska in the best interest of the public.
Commissioner Wallington, do you wish to make the entire statement a copy of the record or just the copy of the regulations?
Whole statement plus the attachments.
All right, then the entire written statement plus the copy of the regulations will be designated as exhibit number 2. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
The next witness is Deputy Commissioner Ben Hilliker, Department of Fish and Game, State of Alaska.
Mr. Secretary, my name is Ben Hilliker. I'm with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game technical staff is composed of 28 fisheries biologists, 45 game biologists, 63 commercial fisheries biologists, 3 engineers, and 2 habitat development biologists. This professional staff has a responsibility of managing the fish and game resources of Alaska. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been in operation for approximately 10 years. Although under territorial status, the department was formed in 1949 and functioned as a territorial department of fisheries prior to 1959. When Alaska was granted statehood in 1959, the new Alaska Department of Fish and Game was faced with a severe challenge, a challenge in many respects not too dissimilar to the one our department now faces with the industrial development of the North Slope and the construction of the pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez. A brief reiteration of that challenge is, I believe, appropriate. Since 1867, when Alaska was purchased from Russia, the territory's primary economic interests revolved around salmon fishing and gold mining. In reference to salmon fisheries, prior to scientific biological management techniques, the presumably inexhaustible salmon resources reached a production peak in 1936 when 8.5 million cases of salmon were packed throughout Alaska. In retrospect, it is obvious that drastic overfishing helped furnish this immense case pack, since shortly thereafter, there was a continuous and steady decline in salmon production until the year 1959, when the case pack of only 1.9 million cases of salmon was recorded. Up to this time, it was the lowest since 1900, when the fishery was then in its first stages of development. In considering the history of the then decimated salmon resource, there are several significant points that we can take a lesson from. One, the salmon resource, and in fact any renewable resource, is not inexhaustible. Alaska's spawning streams, rivers, and lakes are capable of producing and sustaining large stocks of salmon, trout, grayling, char, and other species for commercial and recreational use, but with salmon, probably not at the 8.5 million case level of 1936. The optimum level lies somewhere between the 1936 figure of 8.5 million and the 1.9 million cases of 1959. And this department is currently in the process of determining the optimum level for Alaska's salmon production. Only time and the combination of scientific research and management can determine those levels at which the salmon resource can be maintained. In certain circumstances, research indicates that through man-made structures and rehabilitation work in the streams, salmon production may be greatly increased over that experienced under natural conditions. Except for the year 1967, since 1959, there has been a rising trend in salmon production in Alaska. We feel that local management techniques have had much to do with establishing this trend. While favorable natural production factors have played an important role, our staff feels that we have been able to capitalize on fishable excesses in the specific racial stocks and obtain more optimal escapements on a regular basis than was possible prior to statehood. Our ability to precisely forecast runs a year or more in advance is an important element in this upward trend. The state, in cooperation with federal and university research biologists, have worked in partnership in developing the forecasting techniques. But at the moment, formulation is almost exclusively a state function sponsored in part by federal aid programs. Keep in mind that salmon forecasts were unheard of as late as 1960. We are continuing our efforts toward total rehabilitation of our salmon resource. Among other factors, occasional severe winters, the Alaska earthquake, and high seas fisheries have actually set back this rehabilitation. However, we have met the challenge presented to us in 1959, and the rising trends of salmon production and optimistic forecasts for future increases indicate that the state does have the expertise to meet resource management problems, as well as the ability and staffing to solve them. Again, the Department of Fish and Game is facing a similar challenge to that presented to us in 1959. Now, however, it is not one of rehabilitating depleted salmon resources, but instead one of maintaining and minimizing the impact of industrial development on existing fishery resources. As in the past, the challenge is not an insurmountable one. The proposed Trans-Alaska pipeline crosses approximately 152 streams and 23 major rivers between Prudhoe and Valdez. Our current knowledge from Live and Good to Valdez is comprehensive enough to allow us to provide appropriate fishery protection measures for incorporation into construction activities in this area. North of Live and Good, we are now augmenting the fisheries data for comprehensive fisheries protections in that region. At this time, I would like to point out that the department feels that it is presently coping with a similar conservation problem in southeastern Alaska revolving around logging operations. In harvesting the renewable timber resources of southeastern, logging operations may necessarily be conducted in the vicinity of between 2 to 3,000 anadromous fish streams. The department, in cooperation with the landowner, the U.S. Forest Service, through planning and joint management programs, have found that except for occasional instances, the program of protection of fishery resources in these logging areas have been effective. From a game standpoint, the proposed pipeline does not present a complex management problem. Excuse me. There can be no doubt that the pipeline route from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez will be an environmental feature in Alaska. Construction of the line will necessitate soil disturbance or alteration of natural vegetation along the right-of-way, and at gravel pits, pumping stations, and along proposed access roads. Some local changes in wildlife habitats may occur. Furthermore, access to wildlife areas will be benefited with the opportunity for extensive new recreational access north of Fairbanks, and especially in that area from Live and Good to the Yukon River. The pipeline will represent a major landscape feature of the countryside through which it passes. This impact can and will be minimized through proper handling of soil, the effective disposal of waste and debris, and successful revegetation techniques. In many respects, the history of land developments in other states has been a sorry one. The development has resulted in draining the wetlands, stripping off the topsoil, indiscriminately removing the vegetative cover and timber, gouging out the coal, and then dumping all the wastes into the rivers, lakes, streams, and the atmosphere. In Alaska, we have the compulsion as well as the opportunity to avoid this dilemma, and our department is endeavoring through enlightened management and research programs to influence the prevention of these occurrences. Since we are not a land management agency, we must work closely with other state agencies that have this authority and responsibility. While our responsibility is primarily management of the fish and game resources, our department must maintain an interest in the management and disposition of lands in Alaska, since the fish and game resources we manage are a product of the lands and waters. Cooperative agreements or memorandums of understanding between our department and the several state agencies are in existence at this time to ensure that the development of one resource will not be at the expense or detriment of another. At the present time, we have management agreements with the Department of Natural Resources and letters of understanding or close working relationships with the Department of Health and Welfare and the Alaska Department of Highways. Through these agreements, our department is actively engaged in all phases of wildlife management and planning on state lands. Copies of these have been attended. The oil development of the North Slope and subsequent construction and operation of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline do not represent a totally new set of problems for the staff, nor are there any new or essentially perplexing management decisions which must be met. Our daily operations encompass investigations and recommendations for logging operations, gravel and mineral extractions, seismic explorations, oil drilling, domestic and industrial waste disposal, dredging and channel improvements, road construction, and many other activities which may directly or indirectly involve fish and game resources of Alaska. Our department is not overwhelmed by the resource management responsibility stimulated by the oil development and pipeline construction. Alaska is one of the few remaining places where man can still find genuine wilderness, tranquility, and solitude. As the economy of Alaska expands and changes, its resources should be used but not exploited. Alaska without its wilderness and wildlife would no longer be Alaska. Here is the challenge and the opportunity to preserve for the future, to profit from mistakes and poor planning that have plagued last frontiers down through history. We must and will accept the challenge.
Thank you, Commissioner Hilliker. Do you wish to present your written statement together with the agreements that you referred to as an exhibit?
Yes, I have a copy of the written testimony and the agreements, and I will submit them at this time for the record.
And that will be marked as exhibit number 3. Then.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next witness is James Anderig, Chief Branch of Environmental Health, Department of Health and Welfare, State of Alaska.
Could you push the microphone forward? They can't hear in the front. We turn it wide. Max, but it's going to have to go close here in the front. Just push the microphone.